Hello, I'm Susan Carter, and thank you for joining us for this afternoon's media briefing on the 2008 findings of household food security in the United States. This annual report, which comes out every November, provides the most recent statistics on food security among American households. Joining us in the studio to discuss this is Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, Mark Nord of the Economic Research Service, who is the lead USDA author of this report. And also joining us is Undersecretary for Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services, Kevin Concannon. And just to let you know that we want to do a quick housekeeping note before we turn over the microphone to Secretary Vilsack and our panel. For those reporters who are wishing to join in on the question and answer, the Q&A portion of this briefing, let us know so by pressing star 1 on your touch-tone telephone keypad. And with that, Secretary Vilsack, take it away.
Susan, thank you very much, and thanks to all who are joining us today. Since 1995, the Economic Research Service of USDA has conducted an annual survey of food security in the United States. This year's survey, reflecting activity in 2008, is of importance and significance. Well over 55,000 families and households were contacted, and 44,000 households participated in an extensive interview that involves somewhere between 10 and 18 questions, depending upon whether or not children were in the household. The purpose of the survey was to identify the extent of American families that are currently struggling with low food security and very low food security. Various ranges of people who are having difficulty because of resource constraints to have adequate food on hand to feed themselves and their families. The unfortunate news from this year's report is that today 17 million households in the United States, which encompass 49 million people, are currently challenged with low food security. And of that number, 6.7 million households and well over 17,284,000 American citizens are people who are currently confronting very low food security. And the tragedy is that of that amount, well over 1,077,000 of them are children. When asked to identify the challenges of very low food security, 66% of those in that category indicated that they go hungry from time to time, and 27% of the adults identified indicate that there are days in which they don't eat at all because they simply do not have enough food. The survey suggested that things could be much worse, but for the fact that we have extensive food assistance programs that many in the food insecure category take advantage of. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the Women, Infant, Children Program, and the School Nutrition Programs do provide some assistance and some relief for those families who are struggling with food insecurity. It is a function of poverty. There is no one single answer. And we know that from the survey that children with single parents, children of color, particularly in African-American families and Hispanic and Latino families, are more likely to confront food insecurity than others. I think this report suggests that it is time for America to get very serious about food security and hunger, about nutrition, and about food safety. This, together with several other reports that have been issued in the last couple of weeks by USDA, are a wake-up call for America. And as many American families begin to make preparation for the Thanksgiving holiday, it is time for us to remember that, unfortunately, 49 million Americans may not be able to celebrate Thanksgiving in the way they ought to be able to celebrate it. 6.7 million households, representing 17 million-plus American citizens, may have very little to eat during that Thanksgiving holiday, and then more than a million of America's children may suffer. This is something that we're concerned about at USDA. It's one of the reasons why we will continue to push for additional assistance and help in the food assistance programs, specifically as we begin to encourage Congress to take a look at the reauthorization acts of the school nutrition programs. This is a great opportunity for us to put the spotlight on this problem. Thank you, Susan.
Mark Nord with the Economic Research Service, if you'd like to open up with a statement before we take reporters' call.
Okay. First, just a reminder that these statistics are for calendar year 2008. The survey was conducted in December of 2008, about a year into the recession, and respondents were asked about food conditions during the previous 12 months. I'm going to run through the main categories of food insecurity once again, help to get the numbers connected with the correct descriptions, and then I'll just highlight a few additional statistics from the report. So let's start with three numbers, 14.6%, 5.7%, and 1.3%. The big number, 14.6%, represents food insecure households, those that are unable at times during the year to put adequate food on the table. Most of those, about two-thirds of them, were able to get enough food to avoid substantial disruptions in their eating patterns. They typically reduced quality and variety of their diets, may eat the same thing for several days in a row, cheap, lower-cost food, sometimes less nutritious food. They may be getting additional food assistance from community programs and so on. So the second number, 5.7%, is the remaining third, those that experienced more severe and prolonged food insecurity. That's the category we call very low food security. And in those households, people are eating less than they think they should be. They're eating less than they usually do. Their eating patterns are disrupted. And then finally, the 1.3%, this is a percent of households with children in which children, as well as adults, experience these very low food secure conditions. It's about 500,000 households. The demographic and economic patterns of vulnerability to food insecurity were generally similar to those in previous years, rates above the national average for low-income households, those with incomes below the poverty line, but also incomes just above the poverty line. Households headed by single parents, Black and Hispanic households. Rates were well below the national average in households with children headed by married couples, households with two or more adults and no children, and households with elderly members. The report also includes state-level statistics on the percentages of households with food insecurity. State-level rates ranged from 7%, a low of 7% in North Dakota, to 16% in Texas and 17% in Mississippi. Rates of very low food security ranged from below 3% in North Dakota and Wyoming to around 7% in Mississippi and Oregon. We also report on how much households spent for food, on their use of federal and community food and nutrition assistance programs. Just a few main points from those statistics. Median food spending adjusted for inflation and household size declined from 2007 to 2008. Typical food secure household spends 31% more for food than the typical food insecure household of the same size and composition. And well over half of food insecure households received assistance from one of or more of the three largest federal food nutrition assistance programs.
Undersecretary for Food and Nutrition Consumer Services, Kevin Concannon, do you have anything to say before we get to the reporters?
Well, yes. I think, as the Secretary pointed out, I think reports like this one, which have been coming out annually now for 14 or 15 years, are and should be an occasion for us to get as serious as we can be as a country and as individuals about hunger. And what many of your listeners may not be aware that in the Department of Agriculture, some 70% of the agency's total budget goes into feeding programs. And I know in speaking to people outside of government informally, they're surprised by that. I don't think they realize that the federal government has made a commitment in this order. This very year, as we meet here this afternoon, more than 36 million Americans participate in the SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, what used to be known as the Food Stamp Program. And that program benefits half of the enrollees in that program, by the way, are children. And it goes right through the gamut of ages and demographics. But it, in addition to those 36-plus million people, it benefits the several hundred thousand food stores across the country that participate in it, all who make those foods available to us through the stores, ultimately the farmers and the food producers. So it has a very significant ripple effect across the country. That plus our second largest program, which is the school lunch, school breakfast program, school lunches serves some 31 million children each day, again, half of whom receive that lunch free, and another 10% receive that lunch based on family income at a reduced price. For many of these children in these households, in these very poor households, that school lunch or school breakfast may be the source of the principal source of food and nutrition that particular day. And at USDA, we have been on a sustained effort to make access to these programs, the SNAP program, the school lunch program, the school breakfast program, more available to individuals and families. And I think were we not to have this program, I think the research shows that some 55% of the households reported as food insecure, experiencing hunger at one point or another, have participated in one of these large feeding programs. Absent that, we would have a more dire picture of what is happening across the country in this very challenging economy.
All right, we're going to open it up now to reporters. We have Jason DeParle on the line with the New York Times. Jason, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead with your question.
Mr. Nord, could you go over the definition of food insecure again and what precisely that means and why you all don't use the word hunger? What's the difference?
Well, let me talk about the definition first. And I'm going to take this from two sides. First of all, conceptually, food security is consistent access to enough food for active, healthy living. So in concept, that's what we're trying to measure.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all the food you ever wanted to eat of all the kinds you wanted to eat, but it's enough food for active, healthy living. Now, operationally, how do we go about measuring that? The Census Bureau conducts this survey sponsored by USDA. We ask a series of questions varying in severity. So let me tell you what the typical household says that we classify as having as being food insecure. So basically they tell us a minimum of three things. Typically they'll say we worried that our food would run out before we got money to buy more. The food we bought didn't last, and we didn't have money to get more, and we couldn't afford to eat balanced meals. That's the minimum. Many of them also report that they made some reductions in the amount that they ate. So
the three things were
like I said, that's food insecure. That's the big number. If you're thinking iceberg analogies, that's the iceberg, and very low food security is the tip of the iceberg. The department cares about hunger, and this survey measures the economic and social conditions in which hunger may occur, and that's why we do the survey.
Next.
The issue with the definition between difference between hunger and food security and insecurity, hunger is actually a physiological condition. It's when you frankly don't have enough food in your stomach. And you have certain physical characteristics associated with that. It is more accurate from a research standpoint to use the terms food security and insecurity. Having said that, the study does reflect that there are a number of adults who report at some point in time during the year as a result of being food insecure that they may go a whole day without food. And so that is an issue. And then there is the issue of the fact that we have a million children, notwithstanding our best efforts with school lunch and school breakfast and the other programs that Kevin referred to, who are in the very low food security category, who are also confronting some serious food issues.
Next on the line, we have Ethan Lindsay with Oregon Public Broadcasting. Ethan?
Hello, thank you. Yeah, hello. I'm interested in the state-by-state breakdown, how you, Oregon has perennially been, it seems, on the top of the list or close. How do you, as a state, or how does a state put in place policies to maybe move to create, more solid food security?
Well, let me see if I can address that, and then Kevin can certainly amplify on it.
First of all, I think it's important for states to understand that they have an administrative responsibility as it relates to the SNAP program. They can assist us in making the administration of that program as easy for families as possible, so more families are encouraged to participate. Secondly, it's, I think, appropriate for states to establish food policy councils that can bring to the attention of people in Oregon or in a respective state issues surrounding food security, surrounding hunger, surrounding food. It is also, I think, important for states to be sensitive to the need for continued assistance, both either from the public sector or from the private sector of nonprofit efforts at food banks to provide adequate resources. Finally, I would add that I think the states have a responsibility of making sure that schools are doing the very best job they can in using the school resources to provide good access, easy access to the school lunch and school breakfast program. And during the summer months, working with the USDA and other federal agencies to figure out ways in which we can create opportunities for youngsters, particularly in those non-school times, to be well-fed.
I would add to that, I was in Oregon 2 weeks ago with Governor Kulongowski, who had convened a summit of anti-hunger leaders, and he has been a leader in the effort. He is one of the public leaders who lived literally, he and his wife, on a food stamp budget for a week several years ago to exemplify the many challenges that families face on very low incomes. And Oregon, I am aware, has one of the highest rates of eligible persons who are people who are eligible for the SNAP program receiving it. And you say, how is this possible? It is because the state has availed itself of a number of both options and waivers through the USDA and has put a particular focus on simplifying the eligibility process for consumers. It is one of the states in the country where you are much more likely, when you go into one of those Department of Human Service offices to apply, to receive the benefit within 24 hours. It's actually, in many respects, a model. Now, I'm also aware that Oregon has had extended double-digit unemployment now for at least 3 years, if not longer. So that is one of the variables, obviously, that puts people at risk or makes it difficult. It makes it much more likely you'll be food insecure or hungry.
Can I add a point on that? The rate of very low food security in Oregon actually has not been consistently high. It was high in the first few years that we measured food insecurity and reported it at the state level. And exactly the type of activities that Undersecretary Concannon has described brought that level down to very near the national average before this last economic turnaround. So now it's up again, but it hasn't been high the whole time.
Our next caller is Pamela Fesser with National Public Radio. Pamela?
Yes, hi. Secretary Vilsack or whoever would like to answer this, I'm curious if you were surprised by the extent of this increase given the recession, or are these numbers pretty much in line with what you anticipated? And also, can you say anything about what you envision happening in 2009 with the continuation of the recession?
Well, it's not a surprise that you would see a correlation between increasing unemployment and underemployment situation in the country and a rise in the need for additional assistance and an indication that that translates into more families struggling with food security. We've seen a consistent pattern, especially as it relates to our SNAP program. We've seen record numbers of participants in that program. We've seen a significant increase in the number of youngsters who are now eligible for free and reduced lunch in schools across the country. So these findings are consistent. I think it is important to underscore that these numbers could be significantly worse were it not for the work of folks at USDA and across the country in state human services and state and in school districts working very hard every day to try to figure out ways in which people can be helped. And those who are working in food banks and those who are volunteering in food banks and those who are supplying resources to food banks, this could be much worse. But we do have an opportunity. These numbers, as I said earlier, are a wake-up call for the country, as were the numbers recently about the nutritional deficits of some of our school lunches and some concerns that have been risen about food safety. There is an opportunity here for the country to make a major commitment to end childhood hunger by 2015, and a number of states are already focused on that, to focus on ways in which we can simplify this process so more families can participate, and making sure that we pay attention to the nutritional value of these meals that are being served and to make sure that the food is safe for everyone. And we at USDA see this as one of our top priorities in the upcoming year.
Next on the line is Alan, and I hope that I don't butcher your name, so I apologize in advance. Bjerga from Bloomberg News?
Alan Bjerga from Bloomberg News.
I'm sorry.
Not a problem. Following on your correlation you were talking about, Secretary Vilsack, with the performance of the economy and the number of food insecure people, given that the number of people on food stamps has been going up and unemployment is going up, would you project that the 2009 number may be higher than the 2008 number? And what would it really take, aside from an economic recovery, to drive these numbers back down?
Well, it'll be interesting to see the numbers for 2009. One could expect with rising unemployment that the traditional response would be that you would see additional increases in these numbers. But those increases may or may not correlate with the number of unemployed and underemployed, in part because of the Recovery and Reinvestment Act and its focus of resources in this area. Increased resources for SNAP, increased resources for administration of state programs for SNAP, as well as additional resources for emergency assistance under the TFAP program, as well as our continued effort through commodity purchases, trying to help out struggling dairy farmers, pork producers, and others. All of that can have an impact and an effect, at least to help reduce the pain that folks are feeling. It is, I think, important for us to focus where we need to focus in terms of trying to solve this long term, and that is, first and foremost, people need to be employed, and certainly this administration is focused on putting people back to work. And the Recovery and Reinvestment Act, I think we will see in the year 2010 a lot of activity around the infrastructure programs that have been funded by the Recovery and Reinvestment Act. I think it is also important for us to recognize that we've been dealing with these issues for a long period of time, and it will take a concerted effort to move these numbers, a concerted effort in the form of a reauthorization of the child nutrition programs that that focus on easier access, utilizing techniques like direct certification and categorical eligibility that makes it a little bit easier for families to participate, removes the stigma, programs that focus on making sure that states live up to their responsibility of creating an administrative ease in terms of accessing these programs, and a continued effort on the part of all of us to support the food banks and nonprofit efforts that are critical to this. So it's going to take a comprehensive team effort. There's no one silver bullet, no one solution. But putting people back to work, a reauthorized child nutrition program with additional resources and additional focus, I think are two things that will help.
Next on the line is Steve Barragona with Voice of America. Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I'm wondering, we also have the World Food Security Summit going on in Rome right now, and I wonder if you can comment on how the U.S. figures, you know, if you can put them in perspective with what's going on globally in terms of food security.
There are a billion people in the world today that are food insecure and that are hungry, and many of them are malnourished. This is a number that has increased despite the best efforts of the international community. As you may know, the United States is part of an effort among the G20 nations to make a commitment, a total comprehensive commitment to food security, not only focused on providing emergency food assistance, which has been the traditional reaction over the last 8 or 9 years from America, but also focusing on sharing our knowledge, our technology, our expertise, and agricultural production to encourage developing nations to do a better job and to assist them in doing a better job of being more productive. We are working very hard, for example, in Afghanistan and in Pakistan to create greater agricultural productivity in sub-Saharan Africa, in countries like Haiti, where our scientists can be of significant help. focusing on healthier soil, better seed technology, post-harvest loss reduction, strategies for appropriate storage and transport, and the need for food to be properly, not only properly accessible and available, but also properly utilized. So there's a concerted effort. The international community has made a $22 billion commitment. The United States is working on a $3.5 billion commitment towards that $22 billion goal. And I've been working with the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, and others to try to make this happen.
Do you think there are similarities to the increase in the U.S. Global food or the U.S. Food security problems and with the global problems?
Well, I there's clearly the global recession impacted and affected everyone around the world, and so there is some correlation. But I think that there are deeper and more systemic problems in developed nations, developing nations, as it relates to food security. This is not an issue here in America where we have productivity issues, where we're not as productive as we need to be. We are obviously extraordinarily productive, producing enough food for ourselves and for many, many others. In other countries, it is the inability of the country to be able to sustain itself, to be able to produce enough food to feed its people, or to create trade opportunities that would help finance additional food purchases. So it's a slightly different situation internationally.
Up next on the line is Ellen Ferguson with Congressional Quarterly. Ellen?
Hi. I had two questions. One is, how does this compare to 2007? And then for Secretary Vilsack, are you going to be talking up the survey results at the Senate Agriculture hearing tomorrow?
Let me answer the second question first while we're looking up the 2007 statistics. I think it's important at the hearing tomorrow for me as representing USDA to focus on the fact that our best has not been good enough. We have issues relating to the need for extended reauthorization of nutrition programs at schools and to improve the quality, nutritional value, and safety of those meals. These numbers essentially emphasize the necessity of programs like the school lunch and school breakfast program, the necessity of extending the school breakfast program, of improving the school lunch program, of dealing with issues during summer and after school time when youngsters may not be able to access appropriate foods at school. What is the alternative? Helping parents struggling on scarce resources to stretch those food dollars, making sure that that we have an integrated, comprehensive approach. So, yes, this is a study, along with the Institute of Medicine study on the nutritional value of the school lunch programs, together with the studies relating to obesity and the lack of physical activity. All of this, I think, suggests a significant wake-up call for all of us.
And on the statistical side, the 14.6% of households food insecure in 2008 compares with around 11% in the three previous years. It was 11.1% in 2007, went up to 14.6% in 2008. The very low food secure statistic was 4.1% in 2007, went up to 5.7% in 2008.
Okay.
And
thank you.
Numbers, that was from 13 million households last year to 17 million households.
Okay, from 13 million. And
up next on the line is Amy Goldstein with the Washington Post. Amy.
Thank you. Secretary Vilsack, I have two questions. First, in terms of what accounts for the fact that this year's figures show the worst deterioration in food security since this report's been done, you've mentioned a couple of times unemployment and underemployment. Do you think that's the whole explanation, or are there other factors at work as well?
Well, I think that's given the consistency of numbers prior to 2008 and 2009, when unemployment was relatively steady or when unemployment was going down, I think there is a correlation between rising unemployment and underemployment and the fact that more families are struggling. I don't think there's any question about it. You can take an isolated state here or there where there may be some administrative problems with some of the food assistance programs. They may make it a little bit more difficult to sign up or maybe having difficulty with an effort to privatize their programs. It's not working out, so people are falling through the cracks. But from a national perspective, I think there is pretty good evidence that when you're dealing with families who are below or at the poverty level, which most likely would be families who are struggling with employment. When you're dealing with families of color who have a much higher unemployment rate than the general public, when you're dealing with parents who are trying to raise children by themselves, single-parent families, you know, I don't think it's no secret. Poverty, unemployment, these are all factors. The challenge for us is to make sure that we build on what we have done. Again, these numbers would be substantially worse, and I mean substantially worse, were it not for increase in SNAP, were it not for the Recovery and Reinvestment Act resources for emergency food assistance and for increased benefits for SNAP, and an expansion of the school lunch and school breakfast programs that's occurred over the last several years.
Okay, thank you. Now, you've mentioned the reauthorization coming up a couple of times and these individual food programs. And I'm wondering, do you view the debate to happen during the reauthorization in Congress as mainly kind of figuring out ways to make the existing food programs better? Or are you and, you know, secretaries of other departments within the administration thinking about any kind of more systemic reconfiguration of how to get people food?
I think it's both. You obviously are working within the confines of legislation that's been previously authorized when you talk about the Reauthorization Act of the school lunch and school breakfast programs. But within those programs, there are significant steps that could be taken to increase access to those programs and to increase the nutritional value of those programs. Resources directed to ease of administration, a direct certification, categorical eligibility, make it easier for people to participate, remove the stigma, the use of technology that allows youngsters not to be tagged as free and reduced lunch kids among their peers, the ability to invest in fruits and vegetables to increase the nutritional value, the capacity to link, as we are working on in another part of our mission area, Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food, link local producers with local consumers so that there is a better choice of foods, nutrition, research to determine how best to make foods attractive so that youngsters can participate, public service announcements that we're working with Sesame Street, Disney, to try to focus on young parents to make sure they understand all they need to understand to get their kids off to a good start, working creatively with nonprofit entities and others and community efforts during the summer months. This is a critical issue that we need to address aggressively, that we have we've taken a down payment with the 2010 Agriculture Appropriations Bill. We're going to try some innovative and new programs to try to connect kids with food during the summer months, dealing with H1N1 and the impact of that. These are all serious challenges we face that allow us to look at the program, to change the program, to improve the program, to expand the program, and to create programs that haven't existed that need to exist.
Up next, Scott Kilman with the Wall Street Journal. Scott.
Yeah, hi. The USJ probably does a better job than anybody else at trying to calculate food insecurity outside its borders in the poor countries in the world. When it does that, it uses a measuring stick of trying to find people who consume less than 2,100 calories per day. Why not do that in the United States? And if you did do that in the United States, what do you think you would find? I guess that would be for Dr. Nord. And then the second question is, how much blame do you think the rise in food prices last year should get for the rise in food insecurity? Food prices rose 5.5%, which was the fastest in a long time. Those are my two questions.
Economic Research Service actually does provide statistics on global food security, and you're right, the standard they use has to do with evidences of prolonged, what you might call prolonged clinical undernutrition. That's a condition that fortunately we see very little of in this country. Food insecurity in the U.S., when it occurs, it's not usually just an isolated occurrence for a household, but neither is it usually a chronic condition. The typical pattern of households with food insecurity is that it's several months of the year, maybe an average of 7 months of the year, and in the most severe part of it, the very low food security, a few days in each one of those months. So the condition we see in the U.S. is more likely to affect the quality of the diet, so people without enough money for food, more likely to be eating, getting cheap calories, but maybe empty calories, nutritionally speaking, but usually are not short on calories sufficient to maintain life processes. So that's a very different situation than you see globally.
I might add that walking in a grocery store in the United States is a much different experience than walking into a grocery store or market in some other developing nation. Just since 1990, there have been over 300,000 new products that have been introduced into our grocery stores. The average is about 12,000 new products a year. The rise in food prices, I think, probably had greater impact on food choices as opposed to the capacity to purchase food or not purchase food. I think it goes back to the point of perhaps more focus on foods that would be more filling, but maybe not as nutritious.
Up next is Chuck Abbott with Reuters. Chuck.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Mr. Secretary, you talked about how improving child how eliminating childhood hunger is a priority for the department. You talked about additional resources for child nutrition programs. How much money will the administration propose for child nutrition programs next year? I mean, what sort of an increase?
What
would you do to reduce food insecurity among adults? Should the temporary increase in food stamp benefits be made permanent?
Chuck, we expect and anticipate that the President's budget, which has been submitted and which contained $1 billion a year increase in the child nutrition programs, reflects our view of additional resources that would be required over the course of the next 10 years to be able to address some of these issues relative to school lunch, school breakfast, summer feeding programs, the WIC program, and the like. As you know, the WIC program has also received additional support from Congress. As it relates to the issue of adults, I think it is important for us to allow the Recovery and Reinvestment Act to run its full course. As you know, these benefits will continue right through the end of September of this year, of 2010. I think we need to take a step back and see where we are in terms of the economy, in terms of unemployment rates, to determine if there are additional steps that need to be taken. Right now, I think the focus needs to be, because we have some time, needs to be on the Reauthorization Act, which, as you know, was extended for a year by Congress, and given the fact that we're having hearings tomorrow, I think people are beginning to focus on this.
We're going to try to get these last two callers in. Stuart Doan with AgriPulse.
Thank you, Susan. Question probably directed to the report's author. Looking for a clarification here, those who are food insecure, are they primarily recently unemployed or impacted by the recession, or are these folks, people who are chronically unemployed, those who have been in this situation for more than 1 year?
We've published some research along those lines recently that looked at characteristics of households with very low food security, so the most severe range of food insecurity. And you may be surprised to find that most of those have at least one full-time employed adult. And those, another good chunk of them have one or more person employed at least part-time. So unemployment certainly is a factor. Households with an unemployed adult, no one employed, 2 to 3 times as likely to be food insecure. Those with no one employed and someone out of the labor force because of disability, 2 to 3 times as likely to be food insecure. Nevertheless, the large proportion of households with very low food security do have people in the labor force and employed. So employment and wages, earning opportunities for less skilled, less educated people really matter for food security.
I might add to that one of the changed elements in the SNAP program, what used to be called food stamps, in the 36-plus million people currently receiving benefits under SNAP, 41% of those households have an adult in the workforce.
That is a pretty significant change from the number of years where it was typically more like 20% of those households. So I think it both shows, underscores some of the points that have been made already. This is a program that is affected directly by what's going on in terms of the workforce and the economy, but it's also responsive to those changes for people.
It looks like we're going to be able to get that last question. And Philip Brasher with Des Moines Register.
Two questions, really. For Dr. Nord, real quick, following up on Scott Kelman's question on food prices, do you all have anything in your survey data that indicates what factor the impact of the higher prices might have been? And Secretary Vilsack, do you have a way of a new way of paying for increase in child nutrition? Obviously, the one that you all proposed last year wasn't received very well by the agriculture committees.
On the food prices, Economic Research Service provides quite a bit of research information on food prices, but most of it does not come from this survey. We ask, we don't actually get food price information in this survey. We do collect information on how much households usually spend for food. And that has gone up in real terms over the last year, but down when you adjust for inflation. So I'm going to have to miss on the price information. We don't have direct information on that.
So we intend to obviously work with Congress to identify the appropriate offset or combination of offsets that will pay for this, and I'm confident at the end of the day we're going to find the will and the way to do that.
Any closing comments from our panelists?
This is just to reiterate the importance of this report in the context of other reports that have been issued within the last couple of weeks. Again, I think it is a wake-up call for us to get very serious about food security and hunger, about nutrition and food safety in this country. And I would expect and anticipate that we will continue to focus on this issue as Congress looks at reauthorizing the child nutrition programs, as Congress focuses on additional statutory support in food safety, and as we continue to try to encourage a better nutrition. And I appreciate the hard work of the folks at ERS to put this report together. And as I said, it's a wake-up call, and we've got to get to work.
All righty. With that, that concludes today's media briefing from the Broadcast Media Technology Center at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. I'm Susan Carter.